Welcome to Try Not to Blink, a podcast about the ups and downs, ins and outs, news, tips, and tricks of those who live the optometry lifestyle. We'd like to thank the amazing people at Valley Contacts who have made this podcast possible, makers of Stellar Gas Permeable Lenses and the oh-so-incredible Custom Stable Scleral Lens. In case you're wondering, I'm on the East Coast, and I'm Dr. James Diem. I'm joined by my talented co-host, repping the West Coast, Dr. Roya Habibi. What is up, Roya?
Just living out the last few days of my youth.
Yes, you are about to be over the hill. It is, everyone, Roya's birthday in
month,
2 days.
Slash week.
Yes, slash, you know, 48 hours. I mean, this is a big deal. I think we should start celebrating right now. Any big plans? What's going on?
Actually, currently as we speak, I'm traveling abroad.
Oh, well, I could tell, you know, by your...
No, in the moment, as we debut this podcast, I'm going to be abroad.
Where are you?
I'm going to be in Costa Rica.
Oh, nice. Yes, Costa Rica. The Rica,
probably at a volcano somewhere. And yeah,
you're on the edge of a volcano right now. Like
maybe getting a massage.
Should I jump in? You're being silly.
Yeah.
great.
Yes.
Well, good for you.
Good reason to close the year of my youth and just shut 2020 in the past. And
peace. Yeah. Word.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're done with
you. Done with it. Ready for a new year.
Moving on.
Well, we have a couple little things. I mean, today is kind of like a scleral edumacation, or just call it gas permeable edumacation, but it wouldn't be right if we didn't leave you all with a cell pod.
Yes.
Scleral lens pearl of the day. And like, obviously, Jimmy and I are tapped out with pearls. So I thought what better than to have one of our extra special guests. We've had her in the past give us some, like drop some knowledge for us, but Dr. Adeline Bauer is going to share a little tip for us.
Hello, my name is Dr. Adeline Bauer, and I'm the newest member of Valley Contacts. I'm here to introduce CLIP, the new custom lens immersion program. CLIP is designed to take all the knowledge I've gained from years of fitting scleral lenses and pass it on to you so you can seamlessly incorporate scleral lenses into your practice. My goal is to make scleral lens fitting simple and efficient for all practitioners, regardless of experience level, so patients all over the country have access to this life-changing lens design. With that in mind, I want to share with you a tidbit that Roya and Jimmy made famous, the scleral lens pearl of the day, or cell pod. This week's cell pod is Don't Be Afraid to Get Started. Everyone has to start somewhere, and scleral lenses may seem complicated, but don't be intimidated. There are plenty of resources available for practitioners looking to start offering sclerals to their patients. Books, magazine articles, webinars, podcasts, even social media can be a great resource to help you dive right in. Also, don't be afraid to reach out to an established doctor that can act as a mentor and be your own personal Jedi master and teach you the ways of the scleral lens. Whether you're a student who has just graduated or a well-established OD that is looking to differentiate yourself from your fellow practitioners, scleral lenses offer a unique niche and make you stand out from the crowd. Even ophthalmologists refer to scleral lens fitters. If you're not sure where to start, check out Valley's new custom lens immersion program on valleycontacts.com. That's CONTAX.com.
You know, I'd like to think of myself kind of like a, let's just say, a scleral lens expert, okay? Or gas permeable lens. I mean, I'll just deem it myself.
Just go ahead and throw that out there. I just like to think of myself as an expert, you know, no big deal.
At least in my area, okay?
She's also very humble. You know?
That was super humble. That's the second humble expert.
Yeah.
Yeah. But sometimes I kind of feel dumb when it comes to material. Like, I might be a, you know, highly advanced scleral lens fitter, but I don't totally understand what my lenses are made out of, right? Like when they give me the options, I'm just like, sounds good. Or if I'm having a problem with, you know, a material wetting, I just say, oh yeah, let's go to the older material. Like I have no clue. And actually recently, Jimmy and I were talking about like, let's invite, you know, some of the consultants on from Valley, obviously our main sponsors, so they can teach us. And then I realized, like, what are we doing? We need to go to the source. By the source, I mean the legit expert on gas permeable lens material. And like, who better than our guest tonight? Jimmy, tell us who it is.
Well, I would also like to add in a little bit here. You know, I also like to think of myself as an expert in many things. And most of that is not true. But, you know, it's how you present it, I suppose. That's what I tell my students. It's the confidence you exude, you know, with your patients and others that, you know, allows them to have that confidence in you. And, you know, I must admit, you know, unlike you, Roy, I was not, you know, a residency trained or fellowship trained contact lens specialist. And so, you know, there was a moment in time where I believed that every contact lens that was a specialty contact lens was made with one single solitary material, and that most of those single solitary materials started with a B. you know, that and I actually referred to contacts as, you know, just Boston lenses. You know, and a lot of people do that. And a lot of people just do not understand that there's more to it than that, than this one sort of material, this one brand, this one, you know, this household name that a lot of us just sort of, you know, throw at the wall. And so when I first got, you know, connected with Valley Contacts, working with specialty lenses and understanding, you know, all the intricacies of, you know, what I'll say is sort of like how the sausage is made, you know, like the background of, yeah, like seriously, like there's more to it than the curves on the lens. It's the polymers, it's the matrices, and all that is like this other whole world. And you know, we talk about reps a lot on representatives, professional representatives on the show here that we interface with. Well, guess what? There's professional representatives that the labs interface with. And the gentleman that we have on the show tonight is a real professional and specialist in that area. So I'm very honored to say that I know Mr. John Hibbs. He is a vice president of North American commercial sales and marketing at Contimac US Inc. He's been there for 5.5 years. He's been with he was prior to that with a pretty well-known company, Bausch & Lomb or B&L, for 24 years. So long history in the specialty lens manufacturing side of things. And before that, 5 years with J&J. He's on the Contact Lens Manufacturers Association, or CLMA. What some people may or may not be aware of is a board of folks that are focused on, you know, making sure that the contact lens materials and manufacturing is going the way that it should, and sharing ideas and advocating on behalf of that profession. He's the secretary treasurer of that. So without further ado, he ranks from Texas. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people know this about him, but as a Facebook friend of Mr. John Hibbs, I see that he's also relatively involved in politics. And I'll tell you what, if I was in your area, I would have voted for you. I was like ready to start knocking on doors for you, because he's just a nice guy. The dude is nice. I mean, he just makes you want to sit down and have a conversation with him. And I really appreciate, you know, everything and you joining us this evening. So thank you.
Well, James, thank you. I appreciate you guys having me on. What hype. I mean, I hope I can live up to the challenge here tonight.
Yes,
You know what? The gray hair that I know the viewers can't see me, but I've got a full head of gray hair. So I'm sure that you're thinking that I'm just going to bestow all this wisdom and all this great knowledge upon you. I'll try to do
exactly
what I can.
What we hope.
Well, but you can also hope that I don't have a senior moment. So,
well, we heard actually you invented the gas permeable lens with all of your.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I actually had my chisel out, and I did them from, you know, a little chisel and hammer routine over the years. So
very
funny.
Very.
So, but all, you know, in all seriousness, how did it start? You know, I see your, you know, very brief CV that we have that we just mentioned. Was J&J your first foray into eye care?
Well, you know what? That's very funny because when I got into this, J&J, I was working in the baby products division of J&J.
Oh, get out.
Yeah, and they had bought this brand new company that they were going to reinvent the wheel on, but it was called Vistacon. And at the time, they had this product that was a Vistamark torque, and the Vistamark torque was terrible. I would just tell you, it was just terrible. So there wasn't really much to the company, but they had this ingenious idea to come out with disposable contact lenses, and that were going to be like a 1 week and a 2 week modality, and at that time, I was interviewed to go over there, and they were making a transition. So it sounded like a great way of going. But I got snagged by B&L through a recruiter that said, oh, they're the 100-pound or the 800-pound gorilla, I should say. Nobody sees the future in soft disposable contact lenses. Well, that changed like immediately. So I went into the
B&L came out with soft lens, right?
Well, they did. And they had, and that's a great point, Roy, because they came out with their soft lens back in 1970 with American Hydron. PMMA predated that. But, you know, what was funny about it is that they had a product at B&L at the time that was called U4 and out the door. Every doctor fitted. And this concept of disposable contact lenses was not even supposed to take hold. But it, you know, so it did. And I saw a major change. I came in selling soft contact lenses, and then I transitioned over to Polymer Technologies, which was this little subsidiary that B&L bought that had rigid gas perm materials, and that was the Boston brand. And I worked with them for many a year, and as a result I did transition into Contimac, where I'm at right now, and I can tell you it's been one of the greatest experiences of my life. Great materials, great people. Our industry is just full of great people, and I think you guys can relate to that.
Totally.
Absolutely.
What?
I want to real quick just, yeah. Sorry, Roy. I want to just real quick hit on the one thing that I mentioned in the introduction, and I think that's, it's just, you know, is good background for folks that maybe are not experts like Roya, you know, about the fact that there are different materials out there and that you can ask your lab for different materials. And you know, we're kind of jumping right to the big, you know, discussion here, but you know, I'd just like to hear a little bit about your own experience, especially now with Contimac. And I'll just say, you know, from my own personal experience, I only use Contimac materials in my clinic and for my patients. Everything about it from beginning to end is absolutely fantastic. And that's all I'll use on my patients. But I didn't know that was even an option, you know, again, you know, at one point in my career. What do you think about, you know, again, this idea that Boston is a household name and that folks, you know, can you tell me a little bit about that? And how, you know, what do you think about that?
Let me ask you, would you want to kind of, you want me to take you through a chronology of how lenses or these materials came about, or would you, I could just go straight
in? I want your, like, you know, bullet point chronology, right? Like,
yeah, I'm not talking about like some chronology,
but I want to know. I know that PMMA was first, at least
because Roy and I know, but lots of our listeners probably don't.
Yeah, so. And a lot of people don't even understand that because some of our best gas perm fitters today that like to specialize in it. Boy, trying to think about what a PMMA lens is. Totally foreign to them because those lenses really came about in the 1960s. They were literally a rod of plastic that they would cut into small diameter corneal size lenses, and they were just pieces of plastic. No transmissibility of oxygen whatsoever. a less than 10 if you had anything, and that's with a fenestration in it. So they literally took a drill press and put little holes into these lenses, and they would have to do it even before they machined them, or they would crack. So, you know, you would, but the lathes at the time were these 11 lathes, and they were handheld crank lathes. So you talk about a craftsman. These people would have to try to put in whatever your power, whatever your base curve is, by hand. So they didn't have the lathes of today. And what was really cool about it was that the masters could give you somewhat of reproducibility, but otherwise, when you go back to reorder, you just hope to have a crapshoot on it. So, you know, those materials, and crazy thing is that those PMMA laboratories at the time, there was you know, a handful of them across the country, and they were doing 7,000-8,000 of these lenses a day. Wow. So, you know, then you came all of a sudden with this invention of GPs or RGPs, and the first ones would have been like, you know, you have three levels. You had PMMA, which was everybody refers to as the hard lenses, and then you had the GP lenses that came in, and the first generation were silicone acrylates. Mm-hmm. And silicone acrylates, the silicone actually allowed for oxygen permeability into the lens, and that's where you got some companies like American Hydron and Opticryl and Florex, Seidner's group, and even the Boston 2 that came about. But their decays were so low. And it would have been something like our Contamac Optimum Classic. The decays are extremely low, very rigid material. So you could get a thin lens cut on it, which would help. But, you know, you still had high degree of edema that was happening, because you just weren't getting the oxygen permeability through it. Then it transitioned into fluorosilicone acrylates. And these, with the addition of the fluorine, it allowed for you to be able to have a better wetting surface. Because remember, silicone is hydrophobic. So it doesn't allow you to really have wettable surfaces. And then when we came in with the FSA materials, you really did have a good wetting surface, and you could get higher decays. Problem with higher decays is every time that you put in more silicone, the less wetting it was. So, you know, that was tricky. And it was really up until about 12 years ago that we started getting DK materials that we could get 86 or even higher. And today, you know, we're sitting at 186.
Totally.
So, I mean, it's pretty crazy.
Well, it's interesting too, because I think about this sometimes with my patients. I'm like, especially like a keratoconus patient. Oh, they say, oh, I've tried lenses before. They never worked. I'm like, okay, did you try like, you know, the little small ones, the hard ones? And they'll be like, no, they were RGPs. Or sometimes I'm like, before they're like, no, I wore hard lenses. And I'm like, dude, that's the same. But kind of they're different, huh?
Well, Roy, it's crazy that you say that. You said your patients. I went into one university, one institution, and I spoke one morning, and they knew where I was coming from. And I said, who's excited about fitting RGPs or GPs? And not a hand went up, but I said,
no,
who's
way
excited about fitting sclerals? And everybody's hands went up. And I said, well, for the importance of knowing what the material is, it is GP material.
The same thing,
But people are excited, you know, about the new possibilities in some of these
totally
better materials. And I can tell you, that's what I was really excited about. You, James, you mentioned several times that, you know, this – that company with the B there, you know, became a brand name, and it was, it absolutely was. And, you know, for 24 years, I was one of the people that was pushing and building that brand. When I came over to Contamac, I was so excited about coming into there, because they're truly a technology driven company. I mean, they are reinvesting, and we have materials coming out on a regular basis of just, you know, enhancements and improvements that's allowing for so many more great opportunities for fitting.
When you talk about, I mean, I think sort of what I think about when I think about first the B word and then Contimac, right? It seemed like what Boston did, probably under your recommendation, is creating innovations, creating new, more wettable, but more DK materials. But then what I see and why I've made a huge transition as well, like I really fit, I would say 95% of my lenses is with Contimac material because A, the options, B, Hydropeg. You know, right. Innovations on the lenses that are available that aren't available with other products. So it seems like, what are some other innovations that maybe somebody, like I see my options, I look at DK and I think if I'm in a scleral, I'm going to be a high DK. And if I'm a corneal GP, I'm a low DK. That's kind of my,
right.
I mean, I don't have a reason for that, except it seems like it makes more sense. But like, what are things that you think about when it comes to some of the different materials as to like, what is the advance? Like, why go even higher if my wedding's going to be worse? Is that true?
Right.
Or is there a reason to, let me ask a more specific question. For instance, a scleral lens, my go-to is Optimum Extra. It's got a nice high DK, wets well, it's a nice comfortable lens material. Why would I go to the next level up?
You know, there's varying reasons. And one of the things that I know for a practitioner's sake, for a lot of time, they said, you know, I'm concerned about the higher DK because of wetting. To be honest with you, this is something that Contimac has been able to really do well in the respect of being able to come up with a material that can offer the higher DK, but still wets very well. And you have those enhancements with plasma treatment. That's one thing that we can mention. And then also with the ability of having the Hydropeg added to it. But one of the reasons is if you've got a compromised cornea, you want as much oxygen as possible, especially if it's into a scleral lens. You want to be able to have a good wetting surface. But if you can reduce the amount of edema during the course of the day, that's so extremely important. And I think that's something that should be noted, is that you really do want to look at your patient-specific options and needs. You know, post-surgical, you have so many different issues that come with it. But these materials that we have and we're offering today will allow you and afford you the ability to say, okay, I really believe I need a low K option for this person, a mid DK here. You have a high DK, especially for your sclerals. And if you need that hyper DK, that's where our infinite has come in.
Totally.
And that really, I think, assess and works well for us at the end game.
So, you know, I want to dig into the specifics of the lens materials just a little bit, because I think people know, I'm going to get, you know, a custom stable. I'm going to get a custom stable elite. I'm going to get an Aurora. I'm going to get a Zen lens, or I'm going to get a, you know, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people know the designs and they know companies that make lenses, but I don't think many people really understand that there are, again, and maybe I'm just coming from my own naivete, that there are other aspects of the lens that you have the control over. So who is Contimac? You know, for folks that don't know who Contimac is, who is Contimac?
Yeah, so John McGregor established Contimac literally out of his garage in England. And then he was a chemist. He moved forward and started making GP materials. The success of the company really started to grow through his innovation across Europe. They came into the U.S. and it was tough to take on some of the major players that was in the marketplace. You know, up until the time that I moved over, their share was about less than 10%, but it was one that ICE recognized the quality of the materials. And I had been dealing with these laboratories over all the years, and I heard their concerns. One of the biggest keys for a good material is how well it manufactures in the lab. You as practitioners don't get to see that aspect of it. But if that lens is not being able to cut, if it's brittle, if it offers a lot of flexure, if it burns on some of these lays, you know, it can so distort your optics. So, you know, the key for the laboratories is being able to have a material that is that lays well and manufactures well.
Is there a metric of measure that, you know, you mentioned flexure, you mentioned burn, doesn't burn or break or is brittle? I don't really want to know all the details, but I'm just wondering, are there measurement? Like, can you say to a lab, you know, you go out and you speak to the labs and you talk to the labs about your materials and say, look, our material has, you know, this these components to it, right? I think about, you know,
tires.
Sure. Tires. Like, can you say that to them, or do you just say like, "Look, ours is the best. Just believe me."
No, actually, there's a methodology.
I'm just wondering how it works.
No, you're exactly right. There's a methodology. Each one of the manufacturers, when they send their orders in, they actually literally have to send what looks like a spec sheet. It's a certificate of materials, and it has to show what that lot, what the tolerance range fits into for what is submitted to the FDA. And I mean, Contamac materials, we check every batch. It's not that we do a sample, a sample of, every 10 days, how's quality of every batch we make a sampling of to ensure that the quality is consistent throughout all of our materials. And that's one of the things that, we're able to avoid there being, any type of particles within the chemistry. You know, right. If we see that we have a bad batch, that's destroyed before, it would ever get to the public. And so
what's a batch? What is a batch?
A batch would we also call a lot, depending on what the material is. Say for sclerals, we may get 500 blanks from a particular unit that we manufacture. You know, in corneal blanks, we may get, 1,200. And so with each of our manufacturer of the blanks that are then sold to the laboratories to be made into lenses, each one comes with a lot number.
Gotcha.
Just like what you would find on a bottle of Tylenol. So you can trace those lots to
Makes
make
sense.
Sure.
I don't think everybody knows, but correct me if I'm wrong about this. So I don't know how the lens material is actually manufactured, if they're in big sheets, if they're in long tubes, if they're just in little pucks all on their own. But I thought it was unique to see, when I went to Valley Contacts, and I think, you could still go to Valley Contacts and do a tour of the lab at some point, if you so desired, and see how the lenses are made. But that they, I think most optometrists, doctors of optometry, are familiar with lens blanks as far as lenses are concerned.
Right.
But in a lot of schools, I know for us, we had 15 minutes on contact lens modifications and things like that, where we dealt with materials, and we didn't have any lens blank materials. It was just a little bit of polishing and that kind of stuff, where we got to deal with the material and some of the extra stuff. So when I went to Valley to see how they did it, it was the first time I ever saw a contact lens blank, and it just looks like a blank like you would see
like a hockey
in glasses.
Puck.
It's right, a little miniature hockey pucks. I mean, absolutely. And what was so cool about these is I like taking those when I go to the different institutions, the different optometry schools, and able to speak with some of the students and such, I like to show them the different blanks, because, you know, it could be a corneal. We could hog out the back of the, where you make the base curve of a lens. You know, we have some of those that are set, and then you see these big sclerals with a collar on it that we do the very same thing. And I let them be able to actually see that. But the best thing I would ever recommend to practitioners, you're going into a city, if we ever get back to going to conventions again or something, and especially, you know, like if they're in Oregon and they have the opportunity to drop by the lab there for Valley, I mean, they love to give tours, and it's fascinating to see a lens, this hockey puck of plastic, become a, you know, a corneal or a scleral lens.
And, it's amazing.
I totally agree.
And they can be quadrant specific, whatever. Yeah.
So. One of the things that first of all, I had no idea either. One of the most enlightening things to me was, I had a patient complaining about the color. She said, oh, these blues are so light, I can't even see it. Can you make it more blue? So my dumb ass calls Valley. I'm like, I need a bluer lens.
Hit the shit out of this one for me, would you?
And they were like, that's not what it is.
No, sorry.
They just take it and it's so thin, it becomes so clear because it's just not that much material, but the whole lens is blue. The whole puck is blue.
Right.
And it gets thinner and thinner and thinner. So
if you ever want to have fun, try taking a scleral green and putting it on, and putting that over your
cornea.
You get this green halo on the white scleral
little creepy
section.
That's
of the
why
eye,
they keep so. It blue and clear only, huh?
That's it, exactly. So
I'm all about the gray. I feel like it's still. I want to push real hard for that gray lens blank. I don't know why I want it.
So Contimax has been around for a while, and started by this gentleman in England, and it's grown, you know, tremendously, obviously. And I really feel like I think saw a opening, if you will, a opportunity in the market, and as you know, we see more vertical integration in our fields and in eye care, for better or for worse. You know, I think we have, you know, with Contimac, a company that supports, you know, the independent local labs and practitioners. And, you know, would you be able to speak to that at all and how you play a role in that? And
James, that is so key, because that's what really sets Contimac apart. We are invested in the laboratory network. We think that it's very important that we support the laboratory network, because they have the innovation and the technology in the different creation of these designs. If you mentioned you use
the custom stable,
a custom stable, and the custom stable is unique to Valley. No one else has that. They don't have the curves. They don't know how to cut it. They don't know how to make it. Can you make something somewhere? Probably somewhere, but they're not going to have the exact specifications. For a practitioner, you should love that, because this keeps GPs a customized fit. So you're not getting a box of contact lenses that you can get from mail order or 1-800. This is something specially made for your patient and your patient only, you know? And the beauty of these laboratories is we believe that they have the technology and they can do all the different modalities, you know, presbyopia, keratoconus, post-surgical, you know, astigmatic, whatever your need is, they've got these designs ready to go. That is not our core competency. Our core competency is putting the best materials that offers the variety of ranges of decay and diameters that you, the practitioner, will be able to order from those laboratories. So we said we're not going to get in the manufacturing game. So we want to support two fields. One is the laboratory, and second is education. Is because if we can educate practitioners, if we can educate the consumer on the great characteristics and opportunities that GP materials provide, then that's going to help all of us. You know, it raises all the ships.
How are you supporting labs?
We support labs through, first, I would tell you, the best materials on the market. Second is, you got it. I'm going to hawk my horn there. But we're good. You know, you have the innovation of being able to bring about better wetting surfaces, being able to help bring forward Hydropeg. I mean, that if it wasn't for Contamac, that would not be on the market today.
Wait, let's take a break for real quick. Yeah. Sorry, I know.
Yeah.
We need to talk not only just Hydropeg, but like lens comfort. Let's pass down that wisdom for a quick second. And first of all, like, what is Hydropeg compared to a plasma treatment?
Oh, that's a good question. And that's really important because for the longest time, when plasma treatment first came out, everybody thought it was a coating.
It seems like a voodoo spritz or something.
Well, it's not a coating. What it is it's this what is basically what a photoelectron cabinet that you it like looks like a microwave.
Okay.
And the company that puts them out are AST. And what you do is you put that finished lens into this chamber, and it's hit with all these photoelectrons, like it's bombarded. And what it does is it super cleanses or cleans the surface of the lens, and it makes it so incredibly wettable. You know, so your wettability of the front surface of the lens is better than it would ever be if it was just coming through the lab.
Okay.
You know, normally, because see what happens is a lot of times there's lab solutions, solvents, there's polishes that still never get off the lens. And when they get in, when they would go into the practitioner's offices at that time, they would have, you know, poor wetting surfaces. Well, between that and lanolin lotions that the techs sometimes would rub on their hand, you know, some doctors would just say, I'm just not having great success with this. Well, the plasma treatment really allowed for really good wetting. And, you know, but the problem was where it helped with adaptation. You know, in that first 2 weeks of GP wear, you sometimes the patient needs to adapt to it. So they need a good wetting surface. And plasma did a good job there. But plasma surfacing is not a coating. So it would go off probably within the first month. There would be no evidence of that lens ever having been plasma treated. So by that time, though, most of the patients had adapted to their GP lenses. Now, you come along with Hydropeg, and Hydropeg is a coating.
Okay.
But it requires plasma treatment.
Okay.
So
you got to
clean
it.
Get the lens. You get the lens. You get it. If it needs to be polished, it's polished, put into the chamber, plasma treated, and then taken immediately out of that and put into a solvent bath where it stays in, and it looks like a shaker machine, and it makes sure that that lens is completely covered and coated. And then that Hydropeg can last on a lens up to a year. And the beauty of that is that it just so enhances, it keeps that lens, you know, where it wets well. And we know that wetting, good wetting, allows for better comfort. And what's essential there is if you want to keep your dropout rate of your patients that are in GPs, keep them happy by keeping those lenses, you know, with these options of Hydropeg.
Another thing that I think is important to point out to our listeners who aren't familiar with Hydropeg is it can come off.
Yes.
Aside from the year last, like, you know, shelf life, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It also, you can scrub it off in a day.
Yes, you could. That's important, and I'm glad you're noting that, because a lot of people think it's like Teflon, you know, but it's not. Mm-mm. I mean, it truly isn't. Some of the things that you just can't do is you can't go out and use some of the early generation two-bottle systems of cleaning, you know, these cleaners that have a high viscosity or a medium viscosity cleaners in it, where, I mean, I say high viscosity. When I was growing up as a kid, my dad worked on engines a lot, and he had this soap called lava soap. It was a green soap, and it felt like it was sandpaper. Well, that's how a early like Boston original solution would work on that particular surface. It will really take it off quickly. Well, even some of the middle viscosity solutions are not right for that, because excessive cleaning and
friction
usage of those will just pull that coating off of it. So you really want to use, you know, a hydrogen peroxide or a single bottle cleaner that has low viscosity to it.
What about the people who, for instance, I have a patient who, even with normal cleaning, still tends to get protein deposit on his lenses.
Yeah,
so he wants that, or he's used to that extra clean. Is Hydropeg a bad combo for a patient like that? Or
it's not a bad combo. And in the people there at Tangible has actually even put out their Boost solution that can to give it an extra kick and you know, refresh the lens. But I think one of the important things that you want to try to get to those people is, you know, yes, you'll get those deposits from time to time. The safest regimen that I see is a hydrogen peroxide cleaning, and you know, or ensuring that that patient is compliant. You know, I think that's the biggest issue in headache for most practitioners, is that, you know, these patients are just not being compliant. Totally. But you don't want to do anything that's going to, you know, like an enzymatic cleaner.
Sure.
And I know that ProGen might be one that's a Menicon product. Excellent enzymatic cleaner. I want to make sure that that's clear. But you have to be careful with enzymatic cleaners when you're trying to
clean with ProGen or clean with Hydropeg.
With the Hydropeg on it. Exactly.
What about, okay, just to take a step back away from Hydropeg for a moment, what about general lens care? You know, people always want to know what the best cleaning solution is. And I know there's many great cleaners on the market, but I don't know. I kind of like, kind of alluding to what you're saying right now about some of the older, you know, more sandy cleaners, I feel like that scratches up lenses. I mean, is that wrong? Is that lens too soft?
No. Over time, I mean, they're practitioners used to have polishers regularly in their offices to help try to polish out some of those scrapes that were happening. First and foremost, when we're talking about cleaning your lenses, the old PMMA lenses back in the day, don't ever do like your grandfather did and take the lenses out of his eyes, put them back in his mouth, and then put them back in his eye. So that's how I recommend. The systems also had where they recommended that you clean, tap water, rinse, and then go ahead and put your conditioner on it. That's not recommended any longer.
Nope.
I mean, I would say your two best regimens are a single one step all in one, or going with a hydrogen peroxide system. I think those are work very, very well.
So great cleaning, but not too clean. I tell my patients,
right,
you don't need it to be squeaky clean.
Yeah. Well, with these surfaces, especially if they're tangible treated, they shouldn't require the real strong digital rub that people were told to do for many years by the practitioners.
Is that because it's less likely to Like it's so smooth, it's less likely to get things stuck on it, or
there's not the propensity for those particles or debris to stick to the lens as much.
Interesting.
However, you know, when you have a scleral lens and you have something that's covering up as opposed to a corneal that's moving, you know, you don't want your scleral to move like a corneal does.
Totally.
There's not that backwashing. So, you know, in a scleral design, that's why it's important to have a good insertion solution.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's something like what we have in our new Nutrafill.
I'm glad you brought that up. I was literally going to transition to that.
What a transition. That was beautiful.
I do want to bring up that because, you know, for a while, we had no recommended or FDA approved scleral lens filling solution. And now there have been several more that have come out recently, with the newest being Nutrafill. And what, I don't know, what makes you proud to bring Nutrafill to the market? What about you?
Well, Nutrafill in itself is, it was absolutely needed in the marketplace. You know, as you mentioned, there was no real approvals. So people were just trying to find options of non-preserved solutions that they could potentially fill the back bowls of those scleral lenses, because they're really needed that to assist in keeping those epithelial cells from literally just dying off, even in a one time and causing that toxic swamp, as we would say. But you know, Nutrafill, where it's different than the other products that came out into the market. First, the majority of them were not FDA approved, and then there some of the competitors out there went out and got FDA approvals on a non-preservative saline. But we were able to come out with something that was totally innovative. And I have to give kudos to Ralph Stone, who was with Alcon for many years and came up with many of their solutions. He came to us and said, hey, I've got this idea for this product, and it was Nutrafill. And what it does is it brings electrolytes into play. It brings these nutrients into the solution. And the five electrolytes that are, you know, they're essential for maintaining those healthy epithelial cells. And, you know, they consist of calcium. The real biggie is magnesium. You have potassium, sodium, which you would have in a standard saline, and a phosphate. And they working together really keeps those epithelial cells, you know, still vibrant. And you don't have the dying off or the peeling off of those. And that helps with the less amount of debris that gets behind that lens.
Well, you said magnesium's a biggie. Why?
Well, it's, you know what? That particular...
Because?
Yeah, in the chemistry makeup is just so important. I, you know, that really takes a chemist to describe. You know, from Ralph Stone, who I spent hours with, and he was telling me about this. He says, you know, with that... really maintains the overall insertion solution, the consistency. You know, you have to have that one thing that kind of binds everything together. And that's kind of what the magnesium does.
Interesting. So we have our perfect filling solution with our perfect material. But what do you foresee as the future way to perfect, you know, GPs or scleral lenses?
Yeah, you know, I want to throw on my sunglasses because there used to be a song, the future's so bright, you got to wear shades.
Yeah,
nice. Because I really believe that with GPs. I'm sold on GPs. And, you know, it was, 15 years ago, people started talking about this new fitting type of lens and sclerals, and it had been used years and years ago when these things were so big and They had to have, the different marks put into them to allow them to breathe and everything. Fenestrations, sorry about that. And, these lenses today, they're more than just fitting an irregular cornea or just fitting over somebody with a keratoconic cornea. These lenses today, I'm seeing laboratories that are selling and creating scleral lenses that meets every modality, that presbyopic, they're translating or they're aspheric designs built into that scleral lens. There's some that are working with myopia and ortho-K type lenses in sclerals. I mean, they offer such comfort. They offer so much versatility that as people start, coming up with new drops that you put in the eye, you put a scleral on top of it, it could be reshaping the cornea. The GP marketplace, I should say, the opportunities and options that we have with this are better than I've ever seen during the entirety of time that I've been in the on the GP side of the business. I mean, there was a researcher back in at 2000, 2001 that said GPs would be non-existent at 2010. We are now where the single vision GPs are not being fed as much as they used to be. We're a bigger segment of the marketplace because of myopia, orthokeratology, because of presbyopic designs, because of keratoconic designs, and now scleral designs than we ever have been. And that's pretty exciting.
I love it.
Absolutely. Well, cool. I think, this has been a real eye opener probably for many of our listeners. And now they know not only do they talk to their lab about the designs and the curves and the diameters and everything else, but the DK, maybe something that they're talking about and thinking about a little bit. But the lens material, and asking for materials by name and so just real quick, would you just go over, you don't have to go over real specifics, but some of the high level, what are the materials that Contimac has? I know we mentioned a few of them already.
Yeah. Okay. So Contimac Comfort would be your low DK. Then you would have, for your, mid DK, high DK, you would have your extra and extreme. We have an Hexafocon A that would be similar to the other DK products that are out there that Acuity in Boston have, that we have the same use and name and same approvals that you may see on one of their materials. I believe that it's enhanced because it does have the Hydropeg approval with it. And then we have our new Infinite. Our Infinite has been out for about a year. So, doctors are kind of slowing to initially go to a high DK until they know that it doesn't have issues with wetting and things. The labs and practitioners that are fitting it love it. They're swearing by that this is a good material. The labs love it because it machines well, flexure resistant. And for the practitioners, it gives them those options to be able to fit some of these newer scleral designs that the labs are putting out that they never had those options before. So, I would say if you haven't had that opportunity to try the Optimum Infinite or in conjunction with the Nutrafil, you need to try it. Yeah, cool. Because you're gonna find that quality labs are putting out some incredible lenses for you.
Awesome. About you? I see you have some glasses on there, and I'd like to know what you are. You know, do you know what your refractive error is?
What's very funny is that I've been an emmetrope most of my life.
Me and Roy are too. We're both emmetrope.
And then I hit that stinking presbyopic age, and every year it gets. So these are just literally readers.
Okay.
I'm not ashamed because I had good vision most of my years, but I had never wore contacts myself personally. I didn't have the need. My papillary fissures are so small that, you know.
You look like you've worn GPs for years. It's perfect.
I know. Yeah. Right. So, but no, I do enjoy having a pair of sclerals on from time to time because they offer great correction for me, and I just find them to be extremely comfortable.
Totally.
Cool.
Okay.
Awesome.
A couple other important questions to ask.
Very important.
If you were on a deserted island for the rest of your life, but you have a chef that can make you one meal, the same thing for the rest of your life to eat, I need to know what you would eat.
What it would be, that one meal, oh man, I am a sucker for shellfish. So give me crab, give me lobster, or give me shrimp. And since I'm on an island, it's perfect.
Perfect. I think that's really practical.
You are a Texan. Texans are, right? You're a Texan. Are you born and raised
in Texas? That's right. Yeah.
Born and raised in Texas. You know, I've not met a Texan who is not proud to be a Texan, and nothing wrong with that. So tell us a couple reasons why Texas is great. Give me some, because I don't know Texas very well. And I'll tell you what, I've been there a couple times and I'm like, it's flat, it's crowded, it's hot. I don't get the appeal. I'm sorry. I don't get the appeal. Go ahead.
Okay. First and foremost, we have no state income tax. So that is
very important.
That at the end of
you don't
the year,
need to say anything else. That's
that
perfect.
I will tell you, Texans are some of the kindest, most generous people that you'll ever meet. You heard Will Rogers said that he never met a man that he didn't like. I can't say that about all different points of the country, but I can tell you, in Texas, I haven't met somebody I haven't liked. Yeah. I mean, they're good folks. So dadgummit, I met my wife at TCU, so it was even better. So there you go.
Love it. Beautiful. And what would you say would be your favorite thing to do, you know, that's sort of Texas, unique to Texas? What's kind of like your favorite thing to do, weekend or off time?
Well, I wouldn't do this often. Little known fact to anybody is that I've actually ridden a bull. I've been on a bull.
Nice.
McGraw song that he rode a bull named Fu Manchu for 2.5 seconds.
Yeah.
I only rode it for 2.4 before it threw me off and stepped on the back of my leg. But, you know,
been there, done that.
That would be something that would be unique to me as being a Texan. But I do love my sports teams, whether it be the Horned Frogs or the Rangers, and cheer for them. Awesome. Quite regularly.
Very fun.
Awesome. Well, I think it's time to ask you the most important question. Roya, would you please ask Mr.
We asked
Hibbs.
All our guests this, and we feel it really just rounds out a good conversation. But we like to know what your spirit animal is, and that's the animal that defines your personality. You know, people just hear it, and they like get you, aside from obviously just getting you from the conversation. But we want to know what you think your spirit animal is.
I'm just a big old bear.
Okay. A big old bear.
I can give you that warm bear hug. I can act like I've got a mean old growl. And I can probably.
Can you hibernate?
Well, you know what? With the gut that I have because of COVID, I probably need to hibernate and let it just wear off of me. There's just something about a bear that I love.
Good.
You're our first bear. I congratulate you on picking a unique spirit animal. You are not added to our list of eagles. We have so many eagles. Everybody wants to be a majestic bird, but I like bears. They are very cool. So thank you so much. We could not thank you enough for spending the time with us. I would encourage each and every one of you, when we get back to, you know, meeting with each other and sharing stories and ideas and learning from one another, when you are at a conference and you are walking through the conference hall aimlessly and you see a booth that says Contimac, that you stop and you ask for this gentleman and you introduce yourself, and I guarantee you are going to learn something that's going to help you and your specialty lens practice. So thank you so much, Mr. Hibbs.
You guys are very kind.
We mean it. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it. Before we go, reach out to us for feedback, questions, stories, things you want us to talk about, either through email or on our Instagram or Facebook. We can't depart without saying thanks to Valley Contacts for their support, both the amazing lenses they make and the great people they are to work with. And be sure and tune in and listen to our next episodes. But until then, try not to blink.